This is Wendy Halley, and you're listening to Lucid Cafe. Welcome back. Thank you for joining me. Man, time has been so weird. I didn't think my relationship with time could get any stranger, but I was clearly wrong. It seems like just a few weeks ago, I was hanging my shiny new 2020 calendar up on the wall, and here we are, almost halfway through the year. And what a year it's been. Whew. Abnormal is the new normal. But I'm hoping bringing you these episodes of Lucid Cafe are inviting a little normalcy, a little distraction into your life. So this season, season two of the podcast, is already winding down. Already. I'll have one more episode to share with you in the next several weeks before breaking for the summer. The subject of today's episode is natural healing. I speak with Jack of many healing trades, Quinn Kaya, of the Clear Path Clinic here in Montpelier, Vermont, about his eclectic approach to healing and his compelling reasons for why he feels a holistic perspective is so important. Quinn's core focus is promoting vitality and optimal living in the lives of his patients. He specializes in natural pain solutions, athletic performance and recovery, immune function challenges, anxiety, depression, and men's health. His clinical approach is informed by natural living traditions and direct experience in mind-body practices as pathways of true healing and personal growth. Since childhood, Quinn felt compelled to ease suffering in the lives of others, which led him into the healing professions. As a child, he lived in a community devoted to meditation, yoga, and natural living. Quinn has been studying and practicing natural medicine, meditation, and movement arts for most of his life. In adolescence, he developed an interest in the therapeutic significance of food and herbs, began practicing and eventually teaching martial arts, qigong, and yoga. In 2004, he co-founded a center for acupuncture, yoga, and martial arts. He pursued degrees in somatic neurofascial and biomechanical therapeutics, acupuncture, and East Asian medicine. Quinn has led courses and seminars in universities, public schools, yoga and wellness centers, and has clinical experience in hospitals and other healthcare facilities. Visiting China to witness acupuncture and herbal medicine care in a hospital setting was particularly inspiring to his professional practice. At ClearPath, Quinn uses acupuncture and East Asian medicine strategies, lifestyle optimization, herbs and supplements, manual therapy and posture, breath, and movement re-education. I hope you enjoy my informative conversation with Quinn Kaya. Quinn, thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure.
Tell me a little bit about what you do.
We at ClearPath Natural Health work with patients. A lot of our patients right now come to us for help with pain and anxiety. So we utilize natural medicine to mainly acupuncture and chiropractic to treat people with modern health issues that, and we're known for being able to provide solutions for patients who maybe haven't found a way through a health problem or concern with conventional means. Our mission is to bring natural medicine solutions to the general public through patient care. And so that's basically it in a nutshell.
All right.
Yeah.
It's a good mission.
All right.
You're referring to we.
Dr. Christina Anderle, my partner and I, we co-founded ClearPath Clinic in Montpelier, Vermont. We did a soft opening in September, just a few months ago. Yeah.
And you moved from?
We relocated from Buffalo, New York area. We moved out here in the first week of July. We wanted to be living in the central Vermont area. We've spent a lot of time hiking and being outside and just being in this area in between Western New York and the state of Maine, where her family is from. We also cherish the Adirondacks. So it was a place that we chose for many reasons to be. Yeah.
No, definitely a good place to be if you want exposure to the natural world, which I can't imagine why anybody wouldn't want that.
Yeah, it's rejuvenating.
Yeah, right. It's such good medicine. So, all right, you are an acupuncturist.
Yes.
All right. Yes. So what got you into acupuncture to begin with?
I, as a young person, was very interested in natural medicine and herbs. I grew up around people that were interested in using dietary healing approaches and things like that. Exposure to veganism, vegetarianism, macrobiotics. And in my teens, I started doing Qigong and meditation and Kung Fu. And in adulthood, took interest in pursuing a healing profession, which for me has had several incarnations that are all, you know, overlapping and related. So that was in my early 20s. I was teaching Qigong and the movement arts, yoga, meditation, and had a manual therapy practice for about a decade, trained in Western and Eastern massage therapy practices. Took a lot of interest in Ida Rolf's work. I'm not a certified Rolfer, but the structural integration approach with neural myofascial integration techniques was very interesting to me. I was always very interested in the relationship between movement, breath, and consciousness, particularly as it relates to what we would normally just see as a nuts and bolts pain issue. You know, oh, my knee hurts. Well, what's happening there? You know, what's at the root of that knee pain? Is it just that your knee needs to be treated, or is there a way that you move in your body when you feel anxiety that's creating that knee pain? And I had early on imagined going through traditional Chinese medicine training at a school. I was actually enrolled in a program in Arizona back in 1999. And then I came home, and a series of events in my life went in another direction. And I went to acupuncture school fairly late after doing other things with yoga and massage and that on a professional level. So I went to earn my master's in acupuncture and herbal medicine in 2014, actually. So now I do less manual therapy. I do some of that because it is a love of mine. Most of my work is utilizing tools that come from the Chinese medicine array, which would be mainly acupuncture, some herbs, some tui na massage, movement and breathing exercises, or qigong, as well as diet.
And so you're borrowing from all the disciplines you studied, it sounds like.
Eastern and Western. But, you know, what's unique about Chinese medicine or East Asian medicine is the more PC term that's been in use in more recent times. What's very interesting is it's the oldest still in use system of medicine on planet Earth that is, like, it's intact in a comprehensive way.
It's maintained its integrity from its early practices to now. Is that what you're going to mean?
Yeah, the Chinese were really good at writing things down. And so there's a long history with written work that we can refer to that's thousands of years old. I'm not a comparative history, you know, I'm not a history buff, but what we do know about the roots of Western medicine is that what we know is that there was medicine that looked similar to Ayurveda or traditional Chinese medicine, in that, you know, I think it's been referred to as a humoric medicine, right? But a lot of that's been lost in the Dark Ages. So going back to East Asian medicine, or what's been branded as traditional Chinese medicine, or just Chinese medicine, the tools that we have in that system of healing are, they cover everything. So I draw on my Western massage background, right? Or, you know, my training in yoga, posture and breath work and meditative practice. Chinese medicine sort of has this system that embraces, you know, it's like, yep, we've got, okay, we're going to incorporate food. We're going to incorporate herbs. We're going to incorporate, you know, manual therapy. We're going to utilize acupuncture and that system. We're going to utilize herbal medicine, and all of those things work together. We're going to utilize movement and breath. And so there's, what's interested me is not necessarily something that's bound by culture, but Chinese medicine has this approach.
It's really comprehensive.
It's really comprehensive. Yeah. So that's what I work with mostly. Christina, Dr. Anderle, she is a chiropractor and also an acupuncturist. And so she has unique training distinct from mine, in that she's working with the scope of practice that a chiropractor has. And so that makes what we do and what our clinic offerings is a little bit unique as well. You know, we have this chiropractic and acupuncture approach.
And she will be on the show
as
well.
Yes, you'll hear from her in a coming episode, I guess. Right.
You guess. Perhaps.
Perhaps. Yeah.
Yeah, she's coming on.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, it sounds like you had this, I mean, from the way you're describing it, you had this idea from a young age that you were going to be involved with health in some way.
Mm.
Is that, am I hearing that correctly, or am I just making shit up?
No, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And how does a kid get to that place? I mean, so you said you were surrounded by people who are interested in nutrition.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But still, how does a kid kind of decide, like, this is the path I want to take?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, that's an interesting question, because I ask myself, you know, that there's in the path of the self, there's this, you know, in knowing who you are, there's a distinction between your influences and you, you know. And so as a child, I spent a number of years as a resident at Kripalu. Yeah, there was, so Kripalu Yoga.
Yeah,
and
in Western Massachusetts, yeah.
Right. I was at the ashram location in southeastern Pennsylvania in Sumney Town.
Oh, I didn't know they had another location.
Yeah, that was pre-Shadowbrook or pre-Berkshire's location.
Okay. Who brought you there to the ashram?
My parents.
Oh, okay.
Our family moved there. They were in Western New York, in that area, involved in meditation groups, and their friends, connections.
Gotcha. So it was just the culture of your family. You were
my parents. Yeah.
The culture of your parents.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. And so they decided that we're gonna go and spend some time at an ashram, and we moved there. We lived there for about 6 years and lived just down the road for 2 more years. And
how old were you when this was happening?
5 to 12.
So pretty formative years.
Yeah, yeah. And that had an impact on my life. And I've always wanted to help people. So, you know, as I came into my teen years and went through the years of my life, that helping people became something that I approached through health and healing. So how does one come to that? There were times where I thought, well, you know, I grew up there, and these are the influences I had, so I'm gonna pass this on to other people. And I think there's an important distinction for me to know that this is my calling, right?
So it felt much deeper than just like, oh, this is how I grew up.
Yeah, right. It's not like, you know, my dad had a mechanic shop and I'm going to, you know, take over the mechanic shop for him. And,
right.
You know, because that's what we do. But it has been a meandering path, a journey, and yeah.
So then you ended up studying acupuncture. Do you feel like, this is for me? This is the thing I've been looking for? Or do you feel like they'll be further?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So I think that we have licensure and scope of practice to protect the public, right? Because when you're using certain tools, there's a requirement of a certain amount of training to be able to use those tools in a way that...
It's a good idea, you know, with needles.
Absolutely. And so, you know, I see myself less as an acupuncturist and more as a practitioner who has a lot of tools that he can use to benefit people. I'm less marketing acupuncture per se than I am marketing natural healing approaches.
Okay, and you did start the conversation out saying that.
Right, right. And it's a careful one because people say, well, what do you do? I can say, well, I'm an acupuncturist, mm-hmm. right?
We love labels.
It's an easy introduction. What I mainly do, and this is where the thread of my growth as a practitioner is more accurately described, which is I'm a natural healer. Or let's say I'm a practitioner using natural medicine, natural approaches to help people resolve whatever it is that they're struggling with. And so that takes the whole person into consideration.
You don't want to be pinned down to one descriptor of what it is you do. You prefer to look at it in a really broad way because with Chinese medicine, there are many tools at your disposal.
Right.
And you don't want to... Gotcha.
Yeah, I mean, I primarily use acupuncture as the gateway, you know, with patients now because it's really effective. The public is looking for this kind of care. And that's also how in the United States, the general public knows about Chinese medicine and what it can offer. So Chinese medicine is the practitioners in Chinese medicine in the field in the States that have the most skin in the game are people that have gone to school to have the training and earn a master's degree and are licensed, and they're licensed acupuncturists. They have these other tools, diet, herbs, movement and breathing, manual therapy, that kind of all of those things. It's rare that you'll see someone practicing Chinese medicine in the US. It's not totally non-existent, but somebody who's practicing Chinese medicine as a health professional who is doing one of those branches of traditional Chinese medicine exclusively as a, you know, as a professional practitioner, I guess you could say it's like talking points.
Okay.
You know, it's like, I'm an acupuncturist. Yeah. Okay. I'm really promoting natural medicine because we have a population that is going to the drugstore to purchase over-the-counter drugs, OTCs, over-the-counter medications, and they're not getting better. They're usually not pleased with the result. There's a large side effect list, which, you know, typically patients don't read those side effect lists. And they come to us and they're asking for help. They're looking for a solution. And they're not finding that at the place that they normally think to go. And so we have tools that really have great efficacy with patients. And it's really exciting to see somebody who, you know, maybe thinks they have a disease like anxiety. I saw there was a social media post that was like a little diagram about anxiety, and in the description or whatever the point of the diagram was, it said it referred to anxiety as a disease, and I reposted it and I kind of put our comments on it because it was a good diagram. But there are people that believe that they have a disease.
I've never heard of anxiety referred to as a disease before.
Yeah, isn't it? It was very, it was strange.
That's unsettling, actually.
We have people that have a problem or a set of problems, and when they come to us, they have an experience of being treated as a whole person.
Can you give me an idea of what that looks like? Mm. Somebody coming into your clinic. Mm. What's a common presenting issue that somebody might have?
Here's one that I think is really illustrative. A person comes into the clinic for treatment for pain. Let's say they have jaw pain, a TMJD issue.
Okay.
And they also have some other problems. They have some anxiety. They happen to be
the disease of anxiety.
The disease. It was really, yeah. It's like shocking to see that written somewhere.
Yeah, shocking to hear it.
I know, right? And they, let's say this individual doesn't process stress very well. Their physiological coping response to stress is to grip, to tighten, to have action potential, nerve signaling going to their muscles, and
they're on
gripping,
guard.
They're guarding, right?
Yeah.
And when they sleep, they're a jaw clencher.
Mm-hmm.
What's the root of their jaw pain that they're coming in for treatment for? If we, in building rapport with the patient, and we're certainly going to address the jaw pain, but looking a little bit deeper, the patient may share that they're going through a tough time, or they're struggling in some way with their work or their relationship, or it could be anything. We take all of that into consideration when treating a patient, when communicating with a patient, when doing their initial patient evaluation and intake, when doing their initial treatment. Maybe they've never had acupuncture before, or chiropractic, and we're welcoming them into the way that we offer this treatment approach. We take that all into consideration. You might see practitioners not take that into consideration and stick a bunch of needles in their jaw. Nothing wrong with that. Local application of acupoint stimulus to that area is going to, right, is that would be, you know, textbook for part of a treatment process. But we can actually reduce that jaw pain in that patient by helping them downregulate their nervous system arousal.
Well, and then helping them to see the connection between maybe their stress and their jaw pain.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And to have some open dialogue about that. What I like to encourage with patients is a sense of curiosity in...
Yours or theirs?
Well, I'm always kind of curious, you know, but their own curiosity around what the experience with treatment might be. And that's a very different experience for a patient, a very different dialogue for a patient to have and to depart after treatment with than the experience that they may have in a place where treatment is guided by data points. And there's nothing wrong with data points. We certainly need them. They're useful references for treatment. But if a person's asking for help, and the
treatment... They don't want to hear about data points.
If the dialogue, if the treatment approach is extremely brief, mm-hmm. we spend a good amount of time with our patients. If the approach is extremely brief, there's not a lot of rapport building, and the communication is top heavy on data points, a patient may be going to see their practitioner, have concerns, the scan is done, the data points indicate that there isn't a problem, the patient still has a problem, the patient still experiences headaches. Practitioner may say, well, you know, there's nothing wrong with the data points here. We're going to put you on a pain med cocktail. And
try this for a while and see how you do.
Yeah. And so if that doesn't address the root of the issue, maybe that person has anxiety and it's they're not able to process that tension, that anxiety. It's maybe in this case it's turning into headaches. Well, now they're on a headache medication cocktail, and they might actually benefit from seeing a counselor instead of taking a medication cocktail. We like to work with other practitioners in that way too, and refer patients to, you know, the appropriate practitioners of other scopes of practice, be it PT or counseling or what have you. So that's another way of taking in the whole patient. Is we may not be the best, you know, we may not be able to serve that patient as counselors. We're not licensed counselors. We would refer them to someone who could help, and that can, like with this example of pain and anxiety, it may actually be the best thing for that patient. They can really, you know, they can be in a space where they're not receiving treatment with their body, with a, you know, in a somatic way, like we would with acupuncture or manual therapy or chiropractic, but they're able to be there and really dig in with a counselor into some of the issues that are at the root of why they're not able to process tension in a healthy way. Why do those coping mechanisms of gripping and guarding exist in the first place?
Right.
So to answer your question about, you know, what does that mean, you know, a whole patient approach, you know, that's what we mean.
Yeah, it sounds like common sense.
We would hope. The prevailing medical paradigm in this culture, though, is based on Cartesian thought. So
why don't you describe what that means for folks?
Yeah, so Descartes was a thinker, a philosopher, scientist, and the thought that he had about reality, the nature of reality, is that there's mind and there's matter, and those two things are separate. There's a separation between experience, the experience of life that a person is having in their mind, and then the body itself. And so that underwrites the assumptions about Western biomedicine's approach to treating conditions.
Meaning
that if a patient is ill, we're going to look at the nuts and bolts of cellular metabolism, of...
Biology
of action potentials, nerve signaling, blood flow, anything that you would read on a Western diagnostic scan and come up with very useful data points for. The less tangible component of a patient's wellness, of, let's say, consciousness, may not be taken into consideration when treating a nuts and bolts condition like TMJ pain, temporomandibular joint disorder related pain. How do you get into that there? So
you're saying it's limited.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my job isn't to point out that it's limited, but I do recognize and see that what patients want is what natural medicine can offer, and what medicine approaches that consider the whole patient's life experience can offer. By looking at the layers of human experience, the physical, let's just divide them up. Like we could semanticize this conversation and say, no, there's seven components, or there's four, or there's three. I like to say four.
Okay.
Physical, mental, emotional, and soul or spiritual or whatever. And
whatever
that,
you want to call it.
That may be the more choosy word for some people. But we have these layers of human experience, and to consider the relationship between those aspects of our life experience when looking at uncovering the root of the problem, or let's say it's not one thing, but understanding what it is that is out of balance with a patient's health, that's very, very powerful. And it's a different, that's a different approach than, oh, you have joint pain. We're just going to fix that. Or we're going to give you a shot. We'll give you.
So dealing with the symptoms, just trying to manage symptoms as opposed to understanding why you have the symptoms to begin with.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. All right.
Western medical care is interesting. You know, patients will come in and sometimes I get a complaint from a patient, which is they'll come in and they'll say, you know, I've got this problem and the doctors, I did all these scans and they did these diagnostics and they just didn't find anything wrong with me, you know, or they said that there's no problem. And what I respond with is sharing my thought that this is really good because you now have peace of mind. You've done these diagnostics.
Yeah.
You've ruled out this whole zone of mental, you know, this whole area of if you left it unknown, you might have a lot of questions coming
out
of that.
Right, there's the worst
case
scenarios
right.
that show up in a allopathic diagnostic test. Like,
right.
I don't have a mass.
Right.
I don't have, you know what I mean. But now it gets trickier, though. So once you've ruled out the obvious, then you get into the more systemic stuff, which is tricky.
I think where what you are doing here is, so healing, like with the energy genesis work, right? Healing takes place, and this is more body oriented because I'm touching in on the parasympathetic nervous system component of the healing process. So healing in the body does not take place without parasympathetic neural activation.
So
it's weird to call it activation because it's actually like deactivating yourself, right?
So explain what that means.
So in the human nervous system, there are different subsystems, and the autonomic nervous system is a part of the human nervous system that has the sympathetic branch, which is associated with the fight or flight response. It's associated with energy activation, with activity. It's like the yang side of things.
Okay.
If you were to look at things from a yin and yang, so there's the action mode side, the sympathetic side, and in its extreme activation, it's fight or flight mode. You are wigging out and you
surviving.
Are running out of there. You know, in the kung fu world, we call it using your run fu, right? so you know, you're fighting to get out, you're fighting to lift the car off the child, right? Like mm-hmm. that's the extreme degree of activation of the sympathetic branch. And so there's not really a lot of digestion or conservation of energy reserves when the sympathetic mode is activated. And it's activated when you're driving a car on a low level because you've got to be paying attention, right? The other branch of the autonomic nervous system is the parasympathetic branch. It's associated with rest, digestion, tissue regeneration, and healing. You know, your beauty sleep, it's a real thing. Go to sleep, you feel rejuvenated. If you stay awake for hours and hours and hours, your immune system's going to crash, and tissue regeneration, physical healing is just not going to happen.
Metabolism slows down.
You're saying if you're sympathetically activated?
Yeah.
Chronically?
Yeah.
Yeah, take the individual who has a high amount of stress. They work a lot. They don't have much personal time to themselves. Their sleep is interrupted, not going well. Maybe they have they suffer from some kind of allergy kind of thing going on, and they're running all the time. They look kind of ragged. Their digestion is not going very well.
Right.
Right. Because all of their body is sort of their cortisol levels are up chronically. So there's not a lot happening in the digestive system that, you know, is going very well. Whereas with parasympathetic, that I'm still answering your question. I'll loop back to the point about healing. But did I answer your question?
Yeah.
Kind of. All right. So healing in the body requires parasympathetic activation. And going into that downtime, down-regulating nervous system arousal, that's what energy genesis does. That's what acupuncture and oriental medicine does. And in order to make progress with health issues, or let's say chronic health issues, or let's say a person has a number of health problems, in order to make some progress with that in a lasting way, what I see is that the consistent touching down to a new baseline, so that person's nervous system can downregulate, develop, that the person's physiology and their mind can develop a new sense of like relaxed default mechanism.
Exactly, yes.
Is huge. It doesn't matter what the condition is. If you don't sleep, which is actually like the main way that most people get parasympathetic function.
Yep.
But if you don't sleep and you don't get some kind of therapeutic intervention, it's going to be very difficult to just heal spontaneously from some cure injection.
The parasympathetic state enables self-healing. And what's cool is that your body does know how to heal itself. And it's just a matter of how do you get yourself into that place more frequently. Like what you're saying is bring your baseline down to this place of a new place that's closer to no stress.
Yeah.
So that your body can do what it needs to do, as opposed to taking a bunch of medications to manage symptoms don't heal your body. They just manage the symptoms.
Right, right.
It's a very different way to approach or look at healing.
Absolutely, absolutely.
What is your, kind of in your fantasy world, I don't know if that's the right preface for the question.
No, that's okay. I'll often say something like, I'll preface something comedically by quoting one of my professors and saying, in my rich fantasy life, something might happen, you know? Yeah.
What would you like to be known for at the end of your career? Like, what would you want?
Oh, that's a good question.
I guess it's a legacy question, right?
End of life, or standing at my grave.
You're standing at your own?
Yeah, that's a good question. I pause because that's a question that it's an ongoing question. It's like a question.
Like today, your answer will be one thing.
Yeah, it's a question of fulfillment that I think. It's a question of fulfillment right now, given that I think it's hard to answer at the moment because, just to be honest, you know, is because my mind is really in work mode. We're here in Vermont. We just got here. And all of my attention and effort is on keeping a balance while working constantly to develop new relationships and be present in that.
Okay. So how do you take care of yourself in that process?
Well, I get less sleep than might be ideal.
That's honest.
It's honest. I mean, the new age or natural medicine world, or the yoga consciousness world, and these places that I have been, there's sort of a contrivance of positivity and occasionally, and a sort of imperative for practitioners to be always in perfect balance. And really, I'm human, so I'll be honest, you know, some days I'm just really tired. So how do I keep a balance? You know, I sleep. I take time off. I take my foot off the gas, and then I've got to get back on it again. Because it is living in modern times and moving across state lines, combining two practices into an LLC.
Yeah, it is stressful. Yeah.
There's a lot at stake. You know, there's a long checklist, you know. So I spend time in the woods. That's my main thing. That's where my meditations take place. So yeah, that would be my answer. But what would I want to be known for?
Or how would you like to be remembered?
Remembered as someone who had integrity.
Okay.
And made an impact that was positive and who solved problems. So yeah.
So you and I just met.
Yeah, recently.
Not that long ago.
Right.
And in our second time chatting, I was trying to convince you to start a podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which it seems like you're considering.
Well, I am. I am. And Dr. Anderle and I are. We are discussing it. We're talking about it. I didn't get the sense that you were trying to convince us, though. I thought it was just a natural conversation.
I didn't know how you took it. So,
no,
yeah.
No.
I just thought I was encouraging you to do that because I think it would be great. But in our conversation, I was really intrigued by what the topic of your podcast would be. And I was wondering if we could talk a little bit about that.
The title, you mean?
Or just what you guys would want to do. The emphasis, the focus of the show. What would it be?
Oh, I think we're very clear about this, actually. I think. In real time, the clarity we have on that would be that we would take a topic and, you know, a topic related to health that people deal with and break it down. What are some cold and flu medicine tips? Some natural tips for cold. You feel like you're starting to get sick. What are some things that you can do? 1, 2, 3. Sleep, number one. It boosts your immune system function. The first thing that happens when people are deprived of sleep, when the Nazis did research on human sleep deprivation, first thing that happens is the immune system crashes.
Right.
Just like, bam, it's just like out. So sleep, keep your immune, rest, sleep, drink tea, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, like have a list and look at an individual topic at a time. Skincare, natural skincare approaches. These are some of the things that people normally do. Here are some alternatives. Here are the benefits. These skincare products have these ingredients, and they're tested on animals. They have propylene glycol in them. That's the same thing as radiator fluid in your car. Here's natural approaches to skincare that are beauty products that have no weird things in them. And, you know, they smell good. And you could actually, if you happen to eat it, it wouldn't kill you, you know.
Here. So is that the goal, to be able to eat your beauty products?
No, but I use that as an example because Greeks.
I was being facetious.
Oh,
yeah.
Sorry.
I was being smartass.
But you know, the Greeks, they rubbed olive oil on themselves. You know, coconut oil is a great skincare product. So looking for the podcast, looking at having.
Sounds educational, informational.
Yeah, yeah.
Trying to simplify life.
But on a real level, breaking it down, looking at, in an objective way, something that people commonly deal with, and what are the implications of different types of approaches.
So you'd be doing a broad sweep of all the approaches.
I mean, that's an idea that we have right now, and I'm sure that to do a podcast, even just from the first episode, we would learn a lot and probably change up the whole plan, you know.
Well, no, now that you've said it on mine, you have to do it the way you just said it. So,
All right.
Yeah. So it's done.
So
you have now, you're now promoting a podcast that does not exist.
Beautiful. Yeah. I think our working title is Real Health Talks. We mentioned that to you,
I like it.
Right?
Yeah,
Real Health Talks. Yeah. right.
Coming soon. For someone who's never done acupuncture before, it's kind of magical. seems kind of magical. In the simplest way you can describe, what's the concept behind acupuncture?
Well, the pat explanation is from a you'll see on countless websites is that acupuncture needles are fine needles that are inserted at acupoints in the body, and it helps to balance out the flow of qi in the meridians in the body, and that brings about wellness. The answer is actually it's a multi-layered answer. You know, and when somebody says, how does acupuncture work? You know, the discussion leads in that direction. We have a number of different answers from a scientific perspective, a Western biomedical scientific perspective. There's a lot of things happening when acupuncture points are stimulated in the brain, which results in clearing of stress chemicals from the bloodstream, the inhibition of pain sensors in the body, endorphin and cephalin release. What happens, though, when a person downregulates and experiences nervous system quiet in the body? We can lead into a discussion that's a little bit more on the psycho-emotional level, which is they may feel something that they've been gripping their body to avoid, right? They may realize something about their life that they couldn't hear or feel before. So it's happening on multiple levels. The Chinese medicine viewpoint was that nature exists in the body. The things that are happening outside the body are going on inside the body. We're a walking microcosm of the universe. So there's heat, there's cold, there's movement, there's stasis, right? There's constraint, there's lack of tone, there's activity, there's not enough activity in certain places. There's the gathering of moisture, there's the lack of moisture in other areas. And what an acupuncturist, what a Chinese medicine clinician will be looking to do is see where a patient's life is deficient or excessive or, let's say, too hot or too cold, and try to balance that out somehow. And in the treatment process, we have so many tools. I like to talk about acupuncture because I just think it's cool. And I like to work with it. It's a great gateway to Chinese medicine for people too. It's got a lot of leverage in its clinical efficacy. The tools aren't really important. What's important is I'm, when someone has consented to treatment as a patient, we welcome them in and we take their patient history. We consider everything that they will be reporting to us, and we act on that in a way that, you know, we leverage our tools to bring that person into a state of being mentally and physically that is more balanced for them. And that is a process. And a new patient, we're very careful to bring them into that experience without freaking them out. You know, I mean, we're not going to just talk about all the needles, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We use a few acupuncture points to be stimulated in an initial session and carefully bring them into, meet them where they're at. Some people are very afraid. Some people are really not afraid. They're like, yeah, man, I don't, you know, I'm fine. Just treat me, you know? So we take each person into consideration and bring them through that. You know, if somebody's never had acupuncture before, those are the more fun treatments for me because I like to introduce people, Westerners, to something that is used by billions of people worldwide. And that even though it's maybe new to some people here in the States still, it's actually normal worldwide, you know, to get acupuncture. It's like, yeah, there's a lot of problems we can resolve with that. So
that's got to be very comforting.
To the patient?
Yes, to the patient.
That approach. Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, and all, you know, the nuts and bolts on tools that we use, you know, people do ask about acupuncture needles and that, or herbs, and sourcing of herbal medicine is really good in the States when going through a licensed practitioner. There are a lot of herbal practitioners here in Vermont, and everything that I've seen is looking pretty good. The The acupuncture needles we use and that are used widely throughout the states are surgical grade stainless steel, individually wrapped, sterilized with ethyl oxide gas. They're single use, so that means you open it, you use it once, and just like any medical implement that's disposable, it goes in the biohazard bin and it's not used again. And acupuncture is very safe, and when performed by a licensed practitioner who's gone through a master's program that is for the credential of a licensed acupuncturist, which I think all but maybe one state have licensure for acupuncturists at this point.
Well, you're clearly very passionate about your work.
I do enjoy my work.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It shows. It's cool.
Yeah.
And I certainly hope your clinic just takes off like crazy.
Yeah, it's happening. It's every day there's a new surprise. So, and in a good way.
I was going to say, a surprise that can go either way. That's cool. Well,
yeah.
Thanks so much, Quinn, for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Oh, great. It was absolutely a pleasure. And thank you very much for your time.
Oh, you bet.
Yeah, right on.
Good stuff, huh? If you would like to learn more about or experience Quinn's natural healing approach, please visit him on the web at clearpath.clinic. I've also included a link to his site in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening and for helping me spread the word about Lucid Cafe. I love hearing your feedback and reading your positive reviews. I'll be back soon with the season finale. I'm really excited about this final episode. It's a good one. It's a great way to wrap up another amazing season. Until next time.